about to hear may include some information that is inappropriate or disturbing for minors. The statements, information, and opinions expressed by guests doesn't necessarily reflect the views of the Pop Odyssey Radio Network, its staff members, hosts, or sponsors. Listener discretion is advised.
Is a U.S. woman who was the first to challenge the big record companies over sharing copyrighted music on the internet.
But now a legal spat has broken out over whether the Men at Work song Down Under was actually a rip-off of a children's song.
Why do you think that it's okay to take the livelihood away from somebody for your own personal well-being?
Welcome to Pop Odyssey Radio, radio that teeters on the very edge of pop controversial. Join us as we explore the strange and unusual, the mysterious and bizarre, and the unexpected and unexplained of the most prolific and profound cases of rock and roll, pop culture, and the entertainment industry. And now, your hosts, John Hitchmore, Stephen Redd, and author and rock historian extraordinaire, R. Gary Patterson.
And welcome to another episode of John Hitchborn's Ripped Off series right here on the Pop Odyssey Radio Network. It's Thursday, November 29th, and John Hitchborn is back tonight with one hell of a guest. Bonnie Bramlett, singer, songwriter, and actress, will be here to interview almost this full duration of the two-hour interview tonight, two-hour broadcast. So if any of our listening audience out there tonight would like to call in during the live broadcast, be a part of this archive. You can reach John, Gary, or myself at 615-866-1323 or toll free at 888-375-3123. You can also message in via Skype for you Skype users out there at HVRN Producer. Or you can always join our online people on the main page at popodysseyradio.com in our live chat. You can go in there and post your questions. We'll do our very best to get those to our guests tonight if you want to ask any questions and don't want to call in tonight. And always check out John at royaltytracking.com and his business Records on the Wall. But John, Gary, welcome back, guys.
Hey.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good to have you back. And John, really good show tonight, my friend. It's we're looking forward to this
one. You know, I get into that Aerosmith song. It gets me kind of all going, and I think I pulled a muscle on my back. I was banging on the drums just a little too hard.
Yeah, we know that gets you worked up, John. That's why we play it. We like that.
That song gets me worked up.
Well, that's the way it should be. Rock and roll should always work you up.
Absolutely. So, is everybody done with their Christmas shopping?
Oh, are you kidding? I hadn't even started.
Yeah, me neither, Gary. John, are you telling us you've already finished?
I start
in the spring.
Oh, my God.
Gosh.
I'm not kidding. I mean, I see something, and I just kind of pick it up, and I've got, Santa's little hiding places, and we're pretty far along. We're in good shape here.
I'm not quite that organized, John. You know, it's usually, in about another week or so, I'll be getting on it. But, you know, I think Gary waits till Didn't you say Tuesday night, Gary? Didn't you say you'd wait till like Christmas Eve because of all
the
sales?
Oh man, Christmas Eve you get the best deals. You know, everything comes in because they're anticipating selling it. They didn't sell it, so they cut it down again. You know, and I just like the thrill. I like how it feels being out there with the people who procrastinate.
Yeah,
and you walk into the malls, and you walk into this, and you see these people with these sad faces and tears running from their eyes because they waited too long. But, you know, I can always monitor and adjust what I need.
Is it really sad, or is it maybe the high tension and stress that you see in these eyes?
Well, for me, it only, I guess, if it's Christmas Eve and it's almost like 9 when they close, then you'll see stress with me. But I think the rest of, you know, it's just the sadness of having to get out and do it. I probably will start shopping probably sometime next week. And
wow.
You know, I've just got a couple of things, you know, a couple of things you got to
buy. Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of stuff just fits in, but, you know, I got to get my daughter something. I got to get my girlfriend something. And, you know, those are things that you got to spend some time looking for because you're just not acceptable. By the way, I want to say happy birthday to my daughter tonight.
Happy birthday, Shay. Absolutely.
Happy birthday.
And we had a nice dinner and a lot of fun, so this would be good.
Very good. Very, very good, Gary.
Well, I've got a trivia question for you guys.
All right, Mr. Trivia.
Okay. Well, I don't know if it's a trivia question. It's just a question. I don't want to say it's trivia.
Well, I can already tell you, John, that Gary's better at these than I am, but go ahead.
Well, I don't know. This is a tough one. It's a holiday question.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay?
Yeah.
The third Thursday of December is a holiday. Can you tell me what holiday it is?
Now, what's the question again?
What holiday falls on the third Thursday of December every year? It's not a national holiday, but it's a holiday.
Well, let's see. It's not a deer hunting thing where you can actually get one of Santa's reindeers, is it? I mean, I know they're doing deer hunting.
Nope.
It's not that.
No, but you're so close.
What do you think, Stephen?
I'm trying to think here.
Especially knowing my sense of humor.
Oh. Alcoholics Anonymous meeting for the end of the year?
No, I won't make you suffer anymore. It is National Regifting Day.
National Regifting Day. Is that where you...
Because a think tank of people decided that the third Thursday in December is the day that is considered to have the most office parties. So they call it National Regifting Day.
I have never heard that before, John.
I haven't heard it.
You know, you learn something new from me all the time.
That's true. We have.
Do you have any most unbelievable, since this is the only time we're going to meet before the holidays actually arrive, do you have any really good regifting stories?
So is the third Thursday like all the naughty Santa parties and all that at the businesses and jobs and all that
kind of
stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Did you have a good regifting story?
I can't say that I do.
I can't think I have either. You know, I mean, regifting. I mean, I know it really saves the environment when you regift.
Some people do it so they can go green. Absolutely.
I don't know. Wouldn't that be the best thing? I mean, Al Gore would be right with us.
There you go. Well, I can give you a quick regifting story if you'd like.
Well, let me tell you one.
Oh, okay. Stephen, I didn't know you had one. Okay, go ahead.
No, I've got one. I've got something for you to go with this, John, because this is gonna amaze you because I'd forgotten it. You know, we just talked about Al Gore.
Yes,
Stephen's girlfriend.
Actually, wait, Gary. John, what do you think of Al Gore?
Yeah.
What do I think of Al Gore?
Yeah, you know who we're talking about, right?
I know who Al Gore is.
Okay.
I think he is a little odd. I think he kind of went off the deep end after he lost and didn't know really kind of what to do with himself or after he lost the presidency. And he you know, he's been known for saying some crazy things, like he helped create the internet and all this. I mean, he announced the term global warming on a February day when it was like 20 below zero.
Yeah, a lot of snow too. Yeah.
Yeah, I just think he's. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like a strange man. But I would love to like have him at a party, though.
Right. Well, here's the question: would you buy a used car from Al Gore? Think deeply.
You know, he seems like the kind of guy that. I mean, well, he's a politician, though. That's tough.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like the kind of guy that looks like he'd be honest, but how could he be honest and a politician at the same time? I don't know.
Yeah, good point, John.
Mm. Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing. Are you ready now, Stephen?
Yeah, go ahead, Gary. Go ahead.
All right, so here's the thing. You know, Stephen's girlfriend, Lisa, I mean, she's sweet as she can be. Love being around her. Great, great person. But she has a dark side.
She's a Democrat.
And well, I don't know that, if that makes her a dark side, but she is related to Al Gore. And
wow.
Here I am making all these Al Gore jokes, and my partner, Stephen, his girlfriend, is related to him. She will still talk to me, won't she, Stephen?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She doesn't take any offense to that. She's actually never met him. He's like a distant cousin. But, no, I kid about it, too, Gary. It's all good.
Wait, did I miss the regifting story in that somewhere?
Yeah, well, actually, here's your regifting story.
Oh, okay.
Right? I was just going to bring that up because, you know, Al Gore is responsible for global warming, which we consider doomsday. So
mm-hmm.
after the Mayan tragedy, the Mayan end of the world,
right?
I wonder what kind of regifting will go on after on the Mayan calendar.
I guess it depends on who's left.
Well, that's true, but there'd be an awful lot of gifts that you could find, you know? Personally, I hope I am. And we'll keep the show going. No, I'm hoping I'm still around.
Okay.
But, you know, I think I will be.
Why is that?
Because...
What makes you so special?
All right, here's the answer. When I was in elementary school... All right, I know you won't want to hear this. When I was in elementary school...
Stephen, sit back.
Now, listen.
Yeah,
I was in elementary school. I was watching the news one night, and which is very unusual when you're in elementary school. I was probably the fourth grade. And I remember listening to the nightly news, and they were saying that everyone thought the world was going to end the next morning because there was going to be a lineup of the planets that would be the same at Christmas and the same at the crucifixion. It only happened so many thousand years, and it was definitely the end of the world. Well, after I heard that, I decided when I went to bed, why do my homework? Because if I did my homework, it would be a waste of time. I was kind of excited to see how the world was going to end. I don't know if it's like T.S. Eliot, this is the world, the way the world ends, not with a bang, but a whimper. But I remember when I woke up the next morning, I was surprised to see the sun shining and everything was fine. But then I thought, God works in mysterious ways. And I'm on Eastern time, like you, John, but maybe it was Central, or maybe it was Pacific time, you know?
Hmm.
And so I was thinking, well, I'll get to school. And, I'll we'll see what happens. So I went to school, and with all these good intentions, and I want you to know, the world didn't end. And I had to work my tail off to get that homework assignment done, when all I had to do was that night. So it gave me false hope. Now, I think the minds are the same boat. I really do. So I think if you're putting anything off, don't worry about it. Because if the world does end, you're obviously not going to have to do it anyway, right? The homework, and if it doesn't end, just be prepared. Be the Boy Scout motto. So that's how I learned about the end of the world. And it reminds me every time I hear that. So unless one of the Mayan blocks from the ziggurat falls off and hits me on the head, then it shouldn't be the end of the world.
Now,
that's
that was
my
a
theory.
Beautiful, well-thought, told story, but what the heck does that have to do with regifting?
Well...
He's talking about the gifts that are left, John, if there is an Armageddon.
It's the third Thursday of December, correct?
Correct.
Uh-huh.
All right, what's the third Thursday would be after the Mayan calendar, right?
Correct.
Well, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
The third Thursday is obviously after the end of the world on the Mayan calendar.
Well, I don't know, it's like the 21st or the 22nd, I guess, I don't know.
Well,
might be that the day of the Mayan calendar ending.
So, regifting, obviously... You know, if the world ends on the Mayan calendar, there should be lots of gifts left for somebody to regift and just save
Actually,
them for the next
third
few
Thursday
years.
In December is the 20th, and I think we're all supposed to be blowing up on the 21st or the 22nd, so people will be regifting before that.
Oh, wait, now, I heard it wasn't blowing up. I heard the world was going to turn upside down and that we'd all be flying off the Earth from gravity up into space, which could be the rapture.
How can you turn something round upside down?
Don't ask me. You know, when the Americans won the American Revolution, Cornwallis had his band play The World Turned Upside Down. How about that?
What are you drinking tonight?
Actually, I'm not drinking anything.
Are you sure?
But let me answer it. See, you said the world turned upside down. I gave you an example of when the world was turned upside down again in the 1700s. Come on, John.
Yeah.
I think we need a commercial.
Well, actually, John, Superstar is coming through, so we are going to run a commercial.
Very nice.
But everyone, you're listening to John Hitchborn's Ripped Off series tonight. We're going to run to this quick commercial break. We're going to get our special guest, Bonnie Bramlett, on the line. And there's a lot of people anticipating her arrival tonight. We've got quite a few countries tuned in. And so welcome everyone around the world tonight. And we're going to run, get her on the line, and we'll come back with John, Gary, and myself, and we'll have Bonnie on the line with us. And we're going to get into her music, her history, all kinds of great stuff tonight. So everyone stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Ripped Off with John Hitchborn on the Pump Odyssey Radio Network.
Those of you that may be joining us a little bit late tonight, you are listening to another episode of John Hitchborn's Ripped Off series tonight. We've got a very special guest joining us here on the line, and I think she's going to be here actually till the top of this hour, but it's an honor. And for those of you, I know there's a lot of, we've got quite a few countries tuned in tonight around the world that is tuned in to hear her tonight and hear this interview. So welcome everyone. And as we typically do, John, we're going to kind of switch this over to you and let you do the introductions for this fine lady we've got on here with us tonight.
Well, thank you. My introduction to our not really a mystery guest, but to our very, very, very special guest, happened in a most unusual way. A very, very good friend of mine, Gary Patterson, you all may know him. Oh, Gary, you're still on the line?
Right here, man. Always. Always.
Gary is a very integral part of my royalty tracking company. And Gary came to me at one point, and I said, I think I have somebody who's very close to me who I think that maybe we can help. And so he said, you know, let me see if I can get you two together. And that was it. Okay. And so one day I was cleaning my basement out, and we had lots of toys and some stuffed animals and things, so I decided to take them all over to the children's ward at the hospital in my town. And there I am with this gigantic stuffed giraffe, and I'm standing in the lobby, and all of a sudden I get a phone call on my cell from Mr. Gary Patterson. And he says, John, may I introduce you to Bonnie Bramlett? And It sounded so ridiculous, but it was actually true. I said, Bonnie, I said, I'm so looking forward to talking to you, but I'm a little tied up right now. I'm donating toys to a children's hospital. I mean, how lame does that sound? But it just happened to be true. We took it from there, and I have been honored to be able to represent Bonnie and to help her with her royalties. I'm going to tell her something right now that she does not know, but I've been looking into some things for her over the last couple of days. We've been talking a lot this past week, and I just found out that her publishing company is going to be sending over a nice little five-figure check for her song, Never Ending Song of Love, in an Olive Garden commercial.
Oh, wow.
Congratulations, yay! Bonnie.
Excellent, Bonnie. That is wonderful news.
You know, and actually, John, if you remember, you remember me calling you saying, hey, I heard Bonnie's song on an Olive Garden commercial. Never yeah. ended song of love. So,
so with that, I would like to introduce Bonnie Bramlett.
Hi, the whole world.
Yeah, welcome, Bonnie. It is an absolute honor to have you on here on the radio with us tonight. We really thoroughly been looking forward to this, and we didn't find out till, well, gosh, 24 hours ago, I think it was, John, you broke the big news to Gary and I, and we tried to pump it out today as much as we possibly could, and it seemed to have worked because we got a lot of people tuned in tonight. But
right.
Bonnie, incredible work in your music. I followed you also, some of your stuff. I used to watch you years ago on Roseanne. Just everything you've done, just it's just an honor to talk to you tonight. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me, John. And Gary,
hey, baby, we take care of
you. Know, they got my back. I love that. Thank you, guys. What a great story with the giraffe. Now, see, giraffes are going to be special to my heart now. I didn't know you had a giraffe with you.
I had like a 6-foot giraffe in my hand when I was talking to you on the
phone. I love that. I love it. There's a song in there somewhere.
Well, you know, speaking of songs, I've had a question. I've never asked you this question before. We've talked many times, and
yes.
This is one of those crazy rumors that you hear, and I've been dying to ask you this rumor for years.
Okay, I love these questions. Go ahead.
I have an associate, I guess I'd call him, an associate of mine, who's a music producer in Florida. And he used to live out in California, and he, you probably wouldn't know him, but he knows you. He remembers you, and he used to hang out with you and everybody else at this house you used to live on, I think, off of Laurel Canyon or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, and he tells me that one day you and him, his name was Mark, were in a truck and you were going somewhere, and you told him a story about a piece of music that you had written on the piano, and it really didn't have a name at the time, and a drummer came up to you and said, you know, I really like that piece of music, could I use it? And you said, yeah, sure, go ahead. And it ended up being the instrumental part of Layla.
Okay. No, that's not exactly the story. The instrumental part of Layla, years ago, I had walked in the Olympic studio. This is when we were doing the on tour with Eric Clapton thing. And I'm just a stupid, incurable romantic. I can't help it. And when I walked into the studio, Rita was on one grand piano, and there was another twin grand pianos, and Jim Gordon was on the other grand piano, and they were playing that melody. And they were playing it twin, and they were so in love at that time anyway. They were really, really in love then.
And, Rita, when you say Rita, you mean Rita who?
Rita Coolidge. And
okay,
I thought a romantic moment. And I was in England, you know, the first time ever. I mean, it's like England and romantic and twin grand pianos. And remember the melody? It was so beautiful. Anyway, so I was like quite shocked when I heard Layla.
You didn't write that piece of music.
Oh, I did not. No, 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 no. Wish I did. I wouldn't have gotten paid for it. You'd have to get John.
Maybe you can disbunk another story I heard. I love these kind of stories. Maybe this one has a little more truth to it. The John Lennon song, Give Peace a Chance, which is very famous.
Leon Russell wrote a song called Give Peace a Chance a long time, way before John Lennon wrote Give Peace a Chance. And I think that got all confused. But I certainly didn't have anything to do with Write and Give Peace a Chance either.
Okay, I see all these rumors that I'm just...
I know, well, you know what? Wrapped up with the My Sweet Lord thing. Because, you know, and it being, hallelujah, you know, Georgie's departing day. You know, rest in peace, Georgie. Just a special on TV today where Billy Preston was talking about, you know, how My Sweet Lord came about, and it was on that tour, you know,
right,
with all in a hotel room jamming gospel stuff. So, and, you know, like, it's just, that's what's so crazy about writing songs. You know, we're so influenced by each other. And we, during those days, that artists wrote their own music. We didn't do other people's music usually. You know, most
right.
of the us group, you know, like we wrote mostly our own stuff. And like we'd sit around and play it to each other. You know, it'd be like no rooms, and then I wrote, and then I wrote, and then I wrote, and then you wrote. And so.
And this is why I have a business.
We get influenced by each other, and, you know. It wasn't like everybody said, you ripped me off. I mean, there's only 12 notes. Come on. Come on.
Well, I've heard some people sing in the key of S, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was very interesting. You said you walked into Olympic Studios and you said it was a very, did you use the word, I don't want to say the wrong thing. You said it was a very romantic moment, you said, when Jim
and
Rita were playing.
It was a romantic moment to me. It was as if I had just walked into a musical, because first of all, Rita and Jim were in love at that time, and they were playing twin grand pianos, for crying out loud.
Wow.
And
Gary,
they were playing
the beautiful melody.
The beautiful melody. Remember the melody.
Mm-hmm.
And God, I just got swooped up in the moment. Could have been a little LSD involved as well.
Gary, do you want to enlighten the audience on this beautiful romantic moment and where Jim Gordon is today?
Well, Rita Coolidge, first of all, was Delta Lady. Also, wasn't she Bonnie?
And will forever be that Delta Lady as well.
That Leon was writing about. Well, you know, Jim had paranoid schizophrenia.
They all wrote about Leon. I mean, about Rita. They all that Stephen Stills is writing still about Rita.
Yeah. They were fine. I just
something impression.
I know that he was hearing voices and delusions and unfortunately one night he killed his mother with a hammer.
Yeah.
And stabbed her and he's still in prison.
You.
And Bonnie, the other thing is, he's the first person I believe in prison to ever win a Grammy when the bossa nova version of Layla came out, you know, the acoustic version. So, hopefully he'll have his, you know, he'll be able to have his medication and make him all better.
Yeah.
That
well,
would be nice.
You know, I just don't think in this existence, in this lifetime, for Jim Gordon, it's not going to be all better. But
no.
You know what? He's just, he's making it one day at a time. And God bless Jim Keltner, because Jim Keltner is the lifeline for me. You know, he's always kept us all who love Jim Gordon well informed, because we can't go see him.
Right.
Because it would hurt me. It would hurt Jim. It would upset him. He can't do it, you know. But we all love him and hate what happened.
Yeah.
Him, and I know that I believe in prayer, and I pray for him.
Sure. But, you know, let's give him some props, too, Bonnie, because he was one heck of a drummer. And
best. He's the best. I mean, every drummer. Jim Gordon and Jim Keltner. Hey.
Tops.
And you know, David Gatson. So, you know, they pretty well ruled Los Angeles.
And
Gatson,
Delaney and Bonnie and Prince.
Gordon.
Well, listen, I've got a story, and Bonnie, honey, we've known each other a while, and we might do a little writing sometime here pretty soon if you want. You like that?
Yeah.
But I've got a story.
David would like it a lot.
I've got a story I want to share, and you know, this sounds like a John Hitchborn setup, you know, a rumor, but I happen to know the answer. But I think the story is fabulous because you grew up in St. Louis, and St. Louis, of course, was the home of everybody knows Chuck Berry was from St. Louis, but also Tina Turner, when she left Nutbush, Tennessee, she established Regency in St. Louis with Ike. And I know that when you went to see them when you were very young, that was a major moment for you watching Tina, and you sort of imitated her a little bit. And the word came around in St. Louis that they had to check out this white girl who was doing Tina Turner. And one night you're on stage, and they walk in to hear you. Now, here's the fun part. Who was the only white Ikeette?
That would be me.
Right. Will you tell us the story? Tell us the story.
Well, you know, it was just like when I was singing gospel all my time, from generational gospel singers. So, but I mean, we were almost bordering on Amish, you know. So it's like, in order to get out into the nightclubs, my mother married a scoundrel, my dad, and he would pick me up on weekends and take me to the bar. She drank, so I get to hear the bar music. Well, you know, after I got to be a little bit older, you know, we snuck down to, you know, the darker section of town, and went to a place called Slick's, Manhattan Club. And there was Ike and Tina Turner and Little Milk. Both bands were on the same bill. And I saw her, and I couldn't believe it. She was burgundy. She was... Her veins were popping out of her neck. She was like not anything like I ever saw a woman singer in my life. Except for one time on television, I saw Mahalia Jackson, and that vein popped out of her neck. But she was doing gospel music, and she was standing still. But Tina, that vein was out on her neck, and she was all over the place, and she was sweating. Not perspiring. She was dripping, sweating right in front of people, things women didn't do. And, I mean, not right. Probably fat, sweat. You know, they glowed, not sweat. Anyway, I knew I could do it. All I knew is that if I want to do that, I want to do to people what she's doing to me right now. And I looked around, and I could see everybody else. She's doing it to them, too. And I knew from the marrow of my bones I could do that. I wanted to do that. That's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to be an it, because being able to do that right now, you know, was like way. I knew I could never do that right now. I had to start out being in something it, and I wanted to be an it. Or... Really? There's something in it. You know, I knew I had to be an it before I could ever be an it. Mm-hmm. I just made that up. That was really good, wasn't it? No, it's true, though. She just ripped me. I mean, I just looked. She was just an animal, but drop-dead gorgeous, and a lady. She wasn't doing one nasty thing. She was so strong. She was stronger than any of them guys up there, actually. Mm. But, you know, it was in my experience yesterday, and I'm just turned 68 years old. And I can, my mind's eye experiences it. I'm breathless right now.
Well.
Yeah.
You know, one night, they showed up at your house, Ike and Tina, didn't they, to talk to your mom?
Yeah, they had to get a written permission. They're fixing to take me across state line. And I was underage. And Chuck Berry had just gone
to... Chuck Berry could tell you about going
white
across
girl from.
He could tell you.
You know what I mean? This wasn't happening. Yeah. And before Martin Luther King.
Right.
Well, it wasn't before Martin Luther King, but it was right before him.
Did they have to? Did they have to do something with your birth certificate, Bonnie? Were you old enough?
Mom changed a birth certificate for me so that I could turn, so I could be 18. Mm-hmm. She changed when I was 16.
So you were 16.
I was 15 then. I was already. She couldn't change it. Then I was, you know.
Yeah, you were there. But let me ask you this.
She had the right permission. She had the right permission.
Mm-hmm.
Ike and Tina have custody, temporary custody of me, that I could go across the state line. And I couldn't have done that without Brenda Lee, you know.
So Brenda Lee had something to do with that?
Well, Brenda Lee, because Red Foley,
right.
And she had become a star. She was working in nightclubs.
Right,
well,
she was.
Well, if she could do it, I had to too. But we had to be registered by the Excise Commissioner. And it's mm-hmm. Brenda Lee. I know when it was so cute because when I met Brenda Lee, I told her if it wasn't for you, you know, and I told her that story. She was so cute. She wrote a book to her friend. She went, tell him what you just told me. She was so proud of it.
Well, that's good. But I know one thing. I mean, here you are, this very attractive little blonde in a black band.
I was little Annie Fanny. Okay, I was. It was ridiculous. I was 15, and I was well endowed, and 5'8". Unreal, you know what I mean? And Bambi. I mean, you know, who knew? I didn't know. Yeah. And I guess that, you know what, it was. I have to tell you something. In this business called show business, which Ike Turner gave in, and right now, Robbie, one of the other Ikeettes, it was Ikeettes when I was an Ikeette, that's Sweetie Pie, you know?
Yeah.
On the Oprah Winfrey Network, Welcome to Sweetie Pies.
Right, mm-hmm.
Well, that's the other Ikeette. That's Robbie Montgomery, Sweetie Pie.
Cool.
And so, anyway, yeah, they took care of me. You know what I mean? I never got hurt. I never got disrespected and I was, you know what I mean? It just wasn't happening then. I was in the trenches, man. We were on the Chitlins.
I was
this little white girl that was watching the black band and trying to be like them. I was in the band.
You were there. So I've got to ask you now, this is the part. What is Mantan, and how does that affect you?
Mantan will make a white person bright orange. No, let me tell you, it was the very first Mantan. No, we had run into trouble going into Kentucky. We were going on that turnpike. And we got into some trouble, you know, because I was in the car, and the band was in the bus. But the Ikeettes and Tina and I and Jimmy, the nephew, drove the Cadillac. They were teaching me my parts, you know, because I was only supposed to be there until Flora came from Texas. So anyway, I had to learn a bunch, but blonde-headed and very white. And the times were the times. And there were freedom riders. There was stuff like that happening. And, there were all kinds of big M's thrown around. They were dropping the N love of this and all kinds of stuff. And it got hairy out there. I had to get his gun to stop and tell him I ain't going to be another N this afternoon. Okay, you know, it got hairy. So they were going to have to send me home. And I started crying, but they said, okay, let's just try to make her pass. So they went and got this Mantan. And it's tanning stuff. And they put it on me, and I was going to wear one of the wigs, you know, and just, you know, see if I could pass. And I turned bright orange. I just turned street orange. They were laughing, and I was crying, and they were laughing. Oh, man.
So that was creamsicle orange, right?
I thought, yes. I looked like a freaking creamsicle. I mean, if somebody would have had a black light on, glowed in the dark.
Oh, my gosh.
So anyway, I guess, and that's the night that See, James Brown had the famous flames. And James Brown, like, they had pretty much the same kind of show, except for Ike and Tina. Tina and the Ikettes were the girl counterparts of James and the Flames. And bands were just monsters. So, I mean, Ike had the Kings of Rhythm, you know, so they were killers, too. Well, they would send out spies to see what was going on, who's doing what charts and, you know, who's pulling how many. And then it got back to James. Ike's hired a white Ikette. She's trying to pass, but we all can tell. Well, and then came Ron Grayson, Jay and Robert Wilson, bass player and drummer, white. That's when both bands were integrated.
Right. And that was major time.
We were like little monkeys, man. We were just like really good, and they were training us. But if we were trying to do it on our own and just copy them, the gates were closed. That's why I said there's a difference between artists that sound black and artists that were trained by black other artists, because there is a difference. There's an ability to surrender quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to anybody? Because, I mean, when I talk to, you know, young singers and they ask me to teach them something, like, I can teach them. I can't teach you, baby. You know what I mean? You have to know. It's like you can't teach somebody how to feel. But I can teach you how to release it, how to surrender. First thing I do is send them to choir. Go to church. Go to you know.
Go to church and listen.
Did you learn how to surrender and then be the vehicle? Let it happen. That's cool.
Did you ever work with Jimi Hendrix?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Jimi Hendrix was little Jimmy in California, and I was little Bonnie. And he, St. Louis, and I talked to each other, each of us, about each other for years. So when we finally did meet, he went, "You Ike's Bunny." And I went, "Are you Ike's Jimmy?" We were blowing our minds. Huh?
That's
funny. What did you do together?
Well, we'd played the Palladium. Well, and he walked in, and, you know, he's lefty, so he wanted to sit in with us, and everybody was busting ass trying to, you know, turn a guitar around or find a lefty or something for him. Yeah, just turn it upside down, dude.
Well, I've got a story. I've got one for you, Bonnie. Because, baby, I went to the Atlanta Pop Festival one year.
And so,
you know where I'm getting at. And Delaney and Bonnie were there. And also, you know, and people may not know this, so I'm going to give Bonnie some props, because rock historians always claimed that in the late 60s, there were two fabulous white female blues singers. And one's name was Bonnie Bramlett, and the other's name was Janis Joplin. Now, at the Atlanta Pop Festival, you and Janis Joplin created a big stir. Tell everybody what you did. Because I remember this. I remember when this happened. Go ahead and tell it.
Well, first of all, Janis and I, everybody expected us to have this huge pissing contest. You know what I mean? they expected that. And it was just not that at all. It just wasn't anything, anywhere close. And by now, she was drinking vodka because I guess somebody spiked her Southern Comfort. Oh, no. Southern Comfort. She was so mad at it. And just, I'll bleep myself, don't worry. Anyway, because, you know, if you quote Janis, I'm about to quote Janis, so I'll bleep myself. Anyway, so she goes, "That bleeping Southern Comfort, do you know how much bleeping money I made for them bleeping bleepers? I want you to know, and you know what they bleeping gave me? A bleeping hair bleeping coat."
Hair coat.
And pay for a full-length mink coat.
Yeah.
She was absolutely appalled.
Right. That was so funny.
She was drinking vodka then. Anyway, evidently the power, it was so hot.
Oh, yeah.
You guys, just what a wonderful, but it was like the winter's, and I mean, when I say the winter's mothers, I mean like Johnny and Edgar.
Mm-hmm.
And the winters, other winters, and the Allman Brothers. I mean, it was just such mm-hmm. a great show, Jock. I mean, come on. And it was so hot, and I guess the power went off, and Owsley came and dosed the water. And Janice said, okay, all the power's on, and they have a generator on. And remember Johnny, his last name was he from the Turtles, the drummer?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was taking the most monstrous solo you ever wanted. And, I mean, he was killing it. And Janice and I stole the ambulance. And we just stole the ambulance. And went outside of the, we were in a racetrack at Wine and Pop Festival, and went down to the liquor store and loaded that ambulance. She bought everything. You sit alone, everybody would love it. I come back around the racetrack.
Sirens blazing all the way in.
Sirens blazing. We had all the liquor. We had everything. Yahoo! Oh, Lord, did we have fun?
Well, it was fun because I remember that. That was what was... That was
well,
fun.
I know that she was a big star, and I'd do anything because if she didn't get by with it, I'm so glad it wasn't my idea. We'd have gone to jail.
And let me do one more before John gets in here because, you know, you've played with... Oh, my gosh. You've played with a who's who of rock and roll. And, yeah. You know... You played with Eric Clapton, or Eric Clapton actually played with you, and he brought you over to England, you and Delaney over to England to perform. You also played with George Harrison, who sat in the band.
Yeah.
And Leon Russell. Joe Cocker, did you back up on the Mad Dog tour? Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, that wasn't me.
So you didn't do that one.
Joe and I have worked together many times.
Right, I knew that you'd worked with him. But when I think about all that, tell them about the scene where you're in the limo with Eric Clapton and you're listening to a Skip James song on the radio.
No, I can't give all of them.
No, we're not. We're just teasing. We're teasing a little bit. I'm saving the good
stuff. Oh, no, that's an embarrassing
one. No, we got an embarrassing story here?
Okay, it's so embarrassing, y'all. This only goes around the whole wide world, right?
Well, you've only got two listeners. It's okay.
Man, I'm going to tell you something. I didn't know Eric Clapton. I knew Albert King. Sorry, I didn't know who Eric Clapton was. I didn't know that. I didn't know Jeff Beck. I didn't know none of that, man. I swore for God I knew Bobby Womack.
Yeah?
Really did. I knew all black artists.
Right.
I knew B.B. King. I knew all the King, Freddie, Albert, and B.B. I knew them, you know, and I just didn't know these white guys, kids, at all. I wasn't a Beatles fan. I mean, I was when the Beatles came out, me and my background singer and my horn section was out of work, you understand, because it all went to four-piece bands. Everybody's trying to be the Beatles. So it was, you know, like I was a stranger in a strange land. I didn't know who any of these white kids were. I mean, I heard the Rolling Stones for the first time and thought they really needed to tune up. You know, I did not get in with everybody. I'm sorry. I did not. Everybody was like, blown away. And I just left Albert King. So, pardon moi, that my breath was not taken away. And to get on with it, you know what I mean? So I was like, very aware of the old blues song, I'm so glad, but I had no idea this was the same song. And we're going to see Little Esther Phillips with Jerry Wexler, and because Delaney was possibly going to produce a Little Esther Phillips project, right? And Eric was with us at that time, Eric Clapton and his friend Queen for a Day. I can't remember who she was, but whatever. Anyway, I know I have those little witty sayings. What can I tell? And And on the rest, and it came the long version. I didn't know there was a long and a short version. But anyway, evidently this was the long version. But it came on the radio of the limo where all of his, I'm so glad, I'm so glad, I'm glad, I'm glad, I'm glad, I'm so glad. And I mean, it kept going on. I'm so glad, I'm glad, I'm glad, I'm glad. I'm so glad, I'm so glad, I'm glad, I'm glad, I'm glad. I'm so glad. Well, bleep, I said to myself, and it happened to be out loud right in the back of the limo. Well, dang, I guess that dude is glad, isn't he? He just about convinced me. Turn it now, okay? I'm tired of hearing him say how glad he is. Don't piss me off. Well, Eric goes, well, that's me. I wanted to die, y'all. I'm sweating. If y'all know Eric Clapton, I want to tell you, that is the sweetest, kindest human being you ever want to meet in your life. And to shame or embarrass him, I would rather you take the top layer of skin off of me than to have done that intentionally. I would never have done it. But I did it. I wanted to tell you, Bonnie, that's me.
No, oh, my goodness. Sorry. What'd you do?
I just went, I'm sorry. I guess, are you glad?
I guess, yeah, you're glad. I'm glad that that's you, Eric. I'm glad that was you.
I'm glad, I'm glad, I'm glad, I'm glad. Oh, Lord, please help me because somebody asked me, how did I make it through this world doing stuff like that?
What on is the shoulders wrong? Of giants,
do you talk with Eric at all?
Well, when he came to Nashville, I have to tell you something. He treated me like the queen. Yes.
I missed what you said.
Well, you know, it's not like we chat once a week, no. But if I needed to hop on him, he would definitely take my call.
Middle
of the night, maybe even. You know what I mean? I could ask him if he's black.
If
he's glad. Oh. I bet he wouldn't know for sure. Yeah, how you doing, Eric? You glad still?
You know, just a little historic perspective, because this was right after Cream had broken up. And Eric Clapton came over to the United States because he was really, really into music from Big Pink, which was the band. And he hung around the band. And, you know, he hung around, and he was waiting for them to sort of say, well, Eric, would you like to join our band? The only problem is Robbie Robertson, and the band never offered him the chance. So who had that sound besides the band? And that was Delaney and Bonnie, because you had that gospel feel, that country feel, the blues, all of that was together. So then he goes out, and Delaney actually helped him sing, didn't he? I mean, gave him confidence in his voice.
Oh, yeah, way much. I mean, it was like Delaney punched him in on his first album, Line by Line. And Eric could tell you that. Yeah, he did. But Eric wanted that certain. And what Delaney showed Eric was to surrender to his instrument, just like,
right.
You know, if you can get it from your brain to that hunk of wood, you know, then, you know, everybody's afraid to play themselves. I mean, we're really a difficult instrument. Some of the greatest maestros in the world can't carry a tune in a bucket.
Well, that's true. And I, you know, when I think about all that, it's just so impressive that it worked. But when I hear After Midnight, the original one, I can hear you shining over everything on the chorus, baby.
That was mine, because let me tell you something. First of all, Johnny Cale is just an absolute songwriting genii. Because he doesn't try to write hit songs. He just writes great songs of his.
Right.
And that's what I've tried to do. You know, I don't know how to do the recipe and write a hit and all that. I just write as great a song as, and true to my own self as an artist. And if it fits you, feel free. You know what? Well, at least reasonable. Anyway, but you know what I'm saying. But back in the day, and my After Midnight was a little 45 that Jerry Allison, you know Jerry.
I know Jerry. Mm-hmm.
Rubber for the Crickets, yes. Well, Jay, me and Delaney had gone over to J.I., and J.I. and Sonny Curtis was there. And, you know, J.I. would play all these 45s, and I'm called Bonnie B-side because I will flip those little suckers over. That's how I found Do Right Woman. It's on the other side of I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You.
That's right.
And so there's this song called Slow Motion on the other side of After Midnight, that little 45. Well, I think Slow Motion was the single, and I flipped it and got After Midnight. I gave it to the, and I borrowed J.I.'s 45, and I don't know whether he ever got that back. But I gave it to Eric, so if he didn't get it back, Eric's got it.
Yeah, Eric anyway, still has it.
Johnny Cale didn't even know he had a hit record. He called Patsy, who was Magnolia, quote, you know, she was my assistant. Called Patsy, I need that. You to come and hang me some curtains.
Hang me some curtains.
They needed to do curtains. Patsy said, John, go to BMI. You're a zillionaire.
A zillionaire. You know, there's
You're a zillionaire.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people don't know, but there's a link between you and the Dixie Chicks.
I'm the Dixie Hand.
She's a what?
I'm the Dixie Hand. No, I'm on an interview. They said that they got their names after Dixie Chicken, right?
Right.
Well, I saw that. That's me saying I'm Dixie Chicken.
So we're talking about little people.
I'm also in the bathtub with the fat man. I'm moaning. Do you hear me moan?
I hear you. And we're talking about Little Feet now. So if anybody doesn't understand
Little Feet, the great Lowell George. And I just did a concert not too long ago, fundraising for Trap, drummers, Paul Brer, and Fred. Yes. And I saw Edward James Almost and all them. Are you there?
Right here. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah,
over
here.
And you're still out doing it, Bonnie. That's what's great. You're still out playing. You still do shows. And
I don't do a whole lot of them, but, you know, I try to do the giving back thing right now.
Sure you do.
You know, I'm really acting a lot. I've got another thing coming up, Treasure Island. Andrew Davis is directing it. And it's a story of Jean Lafitte, but it's in now. I can't tell you too much about it. But I'm doing a little acting and stuff like that. I really love it. Right now, I just bought myself Pro Tools. I just went and bought it. I don't know the first thing about how to work it yet. Becca is going to come and do sticky tape with me. Here, Mama, do this first.
Yeah.
Because she's got her studio. And so she talked me into it. You know what? And I just think that's how I'm going to do my book and everything. I just have to talk it because I have ADHD too bad. I don't know what else.
But I'm glad you're talking about your acting career, because we know about Roseanne, but you also had a good role in The Guardian with Kevin Costner.
Yes, that was a good one.
That was a good one. That was a lovely piece. I couldn't have picked a better monologue. That monologue that I had about aging.
Yeah, can you do that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I can.
Great.
You know what? And I don't complain one bit about the pain in these hips, because I walked up those 18 stairs every night for 18 years to lay down next to a man who loved me. So, no, I don't complain about these pains and these lines. Not one bit. I've laid down in the sunshine, in Hawaiian sun, Florida sun. Some of the most beautiful days in the world shone down on my face, and that's where these wrinkles come from. I've always been old. Are you kidding me?
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's fabulous.
Very good.
That's great. I tell you, you're fabulous, baby. And, you know, as an actor, you've got the soul for this. I mean, you've got to do it, the music. And I know that you're going to have to leave us, but I've got to tell you something, and this is just quick. I know that when you were starting, you used to do a lot of competitions to try to get something, but you always knew you were in trouble if you saw one thing. You remember that?
Wait a minute. Well?
All right. You know when you did competitions like Palomino or whatever, And you were up there singing?
Yeah. I always knew. You know what I always thought is I just had a cowgirl outfit. That's it, isn't it? I needed that cowgirl outfit. You want me to tell that story, don't you?
Well, yeah, I love it, baby. I do. I think everybody like to hear
this. All right. Well, and it's true. And I got to tell you something. I had Eddie Montgomery. I think Eddie Montgomery had to call in oxygen when I told him this story. I swear to God, he liked to die. Well, and if you know country music during back in my day, now me and John Hartford came up together, and that was my first talent contest. And his daddy took him and my daddy took me to a Saturday afternoon at Stallings Park. And it was, there was a stage outside and barbecue, whole pig, and, you know, they'd be drunk, music and everything. And, well, John would go up and he'd play banjo or fiddle and clog dance, and he was about 14. I guess I was about 12, something like that. Here come this girl up there. She was up there singing her head off. And had a cowgirl outfit on. Look, and Brenda Lee used to have a cowgirl outfit too, and I used to want to be Brenda Lee so bad. Before I wanted to be Tina Turner, I wanted to be Brenda Lee. Oh my God. Anyway, I got up and I didn't win. She won because she had that cowgirl outfit, had guns and everything. Little lace on her skirt made me sick. I told her, I just need to. Oh, well, fast forward years. Here I am at Palomino nightclub. Now, Gary, you can tell them a little more about Palomino, but it's Johnny Cash played there and everybody. Yeah. Gordon, everybody who's anybody that everybody lived.
That's played right.
And at that time, Tommy Thomas owned the Palomino, and he was just about as big a star as any other star that ever played there. Tommy Thomas decided whether they'd play there or not, and he was arrogant. But lovingly, he liked, and I was young and cute, so I got by with it. Anyway, I come in there and sang my ass off. Every Thursday night was talent show, and you'd get $50. Well, that's what I'd pay my rent with. You know, I was hoping to win them talent shows, because I'd be shooting pool to pay my rent and shit. When I first got to California to be a big star, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know I was coming yet. They wasn't ready for me, so I had to shoot a little pool. Anyway, so I went to the Palomino to win, and I sang crazy. And I brought that house down. And I'm a son of a gun right behind me, came, I want to be a Ulan girl. And out of the blue come this woman in a cowgirl outfit. And bless her heart, she didn't have any legs. She's on one of them skateboards. And she comes skateboarding out there. And I mean, she had that skateboard doing everything. It's line dancing all by itself. Almost sends yodeling. And then all of a sudden she goes, I just do it so fast. And she, of course, she won. And I knew it was because she had that cowgirl outfit on. I knew, honey, I sang crazy better than she yodeled.
Yeah.